All right, we're starting here on the top of Mem Zayin Amud Aleph with the new Perek, Perek Hamishi, continuing the Seder Avodah. Here we were in the process of bringing in the Ketoret to the Pnai V'Lipnim. We left off in the previous Perek where the Kohen Gadol had taken the coals off of the Mizbech HaChitzon, and then he placed them down on the floor, and now he's going to get the Ketoret. So now when he goes to get the Ketoret, Otzi Olo et HaKaf ve'et HaMachta. Take out the spoon, the ladle, and the machta in the pan. Chafan melochof nav. He takes out of Ketoret two handfuls. V'natan oto HaKaf. He takes it and places that into the spoon, or the ladle. HaGadol lefi godlo v'katan lefi kono. It's not a fixed size, it's a subjective size depending on the hands of the Kohen Gadol. Whatever the size of his hands are, it's the amount of Ketoret that's taken is dependent on the size of his hands. V'kach hayta midata. And that was its measurement. Natalat amachta b'yemino, takes the pan in his right hand, v'takaf bismolo, and he takes this spoon, the ladle, in his left hand. So now the Gemara is going to go through the Mishnah line by line, which says, machta, why is there a pan here? Hatanale, we already had that in the previous Mishnayot. Exactly what you were saying, which is, natalat amachta, v'ala l'rosh hamizbeach, v'chote, v'yoreit. So there you had the pan, he went up to the top of his back, put the poles in it, and then put it down. So the pan's done already. What's the pan that we're talking about over here? Why is this a pan? They already have the pan with the holes in it that are sitting on the floor of the Azara right now. It says, Hata machta de gechalim. Over there, that previous Mishnah was talking about the pan for the coals. Bahacha machta de ketoret. Over here, we're talking about the pan for the ketoret. Ditanya. We have a braita utziolo et akaf reikan milishkat akelim. They took out the ladle empty from the Lishkat HaKelim, from the storehouse, the storage room, the closet of the vessels. Umachta gidusha shel ketoret. And then they took out a pan piled high with ketoret, milishkat beit avtinas, from the location where they did the ketoret, they made the ketoret. They took him out a pan full of ketoret, from which he did the Melochofnaim, where he took out the two handfuls, fistfuls of ketoret from there. There are two pans here, one pan that contains the coals, and one pan which is presenting the ketoret to him. The Mishnah here is speaking about that pan that has a ketoret on it that they're presenting to him. He's going to leave that pan behind because he's going to take it in his hands and then into the spoon. Chafan melochof nav v'natein l'tok hakaf hagadol lefi godo v'akatan lefi kodno v'ha'ekach hayata midata. Kaf b'yom ha'kipurim l'amalif. Why do I need this ladle, this spoon at all? It says melochof nav v'hevi amar rachmana. You have to have two handfuls, two fistfuls, and you bring it in. Shum d'lo efshar. There's no other possibility. Dechin avid. What are you going to do? Nayel v'hadar na'ayel. First he'll take in the pan with the coals, then come out, and then take the two handfuls full of ketoret and enter in again. Havachat amar rachmana v'lo shteavot. The Torah says that he's allowed to enter there once, not twice. When he brings it in to the Lifnai v'Lifnim in the Ketoret, says V'akach melo machta gach leish mal mizbeach v'fnei Hashem u'melo chufnav ketoret tzavim taka v'hevi mibeit laparochet. It only says hevi once for that whole process, which is both the coals and the Ketoret. So he can't go in twice. So nishkalei the Ketoret v'chufnav, so he'll keep the Ketoret in his hands, v'nachtei l'machta the gechalim ilavei. Then what he'll do is he'll put the pan of coals on top of his hands, v'leo, and then he'll go in. Now, leaving aside the fact that that might not be so comfortable, well, he'll balance it on top. If somebody else can put it on top for him, that's not a problem. The problem is once he gets in there, what's he going to do? Besides the fact that the pan is hot, and he's carrying it that way, it may not be so comfortable. The Yerushalmi does say there was an artik, there was a leather encasement around it, because we spoke about that, the nashtik that had the handle, so maybe they had it on the bottom as well. V'leo. Then he'll go in. Kimati otom. When he gets to the Kodesh HaKodeshim, echi lavid. How is he going to do? He has two hands for the Ketoret, and he has a coals balanced on top of his hands. So nishkale b'shinei. But he's going to take it off with his teeth. Pretty strong teeth. V'nachte the machto. And then lower the machto down to the ground, and then put the Ketoret on it. Hashto lifnei melech basar v'damenu simkein. That's not the way you would present something before a king. So then, if they melech malchem lochim hakadosh baruch hu achad kama v'kama, certainly before God, you would not present something in that way. Hilkach lo efshar. So there's no possibility. But came into lo efshar, abdinon kedashkachan benisim. So we look for a paradigm in the Torah of ketoret that is brought, and we know that by the nisim in Parshat Naso, they bring kafachat of ketoret. So since we already have a paradigm of using a ladle, a spoon to break ketoret, we utilize the same methodology over here. We put it into a spoon because that frees up one of his hands. So now he only needs one hand to carry the ketoret, and he can carry the coals in the other hand. So So because of that, we require the spoon. Tosafot does suggest another methodology. He says, well, if you make a very long handle to the pan of coals, which we already know they did, they made it already longer, but if you made it even longer, he says that if you could put it underneath his underarm and then balance on top of his hands, and then when he gets there, he could lower it and slide it off slowly, but hold the handle under his underarm and it'll go down slowly. So he gives two answers. One is either for sure coals would spill out, and that's a problem, or he gives the same answer as the Gemara does. That's not the way that you would do it before a king, so why would you do that before a Kodesh Baruch Hu? So even though there are maybe acrobatic ways that he could do this, nevertheless, they're not the proper presentation. And because of that, we say that he splits it up into, dumps it into a spoon, his melochof naim, and then he takes in the pan separately with this ladle, and then later on he has to re-engineer the whole thing once he's inside the Kodesh HaKodeshim. So now, Natal tamachtab yamin v'takap kusmol. Now, we're back to your machtav. We have a machtav coals in his right hand, and the ladle full of ketoret in his left hand. Gemara uses an expression that he uses other places, which is Yitziva ba'aro giora b'shmei shmayo. What, the resident, the citizen, is on the ground, and giora and the stranger is up in the heavens? It's backwards. That's what the expression means. It's a colloquialism that means you've got it all backwards. The most important part here is the ketoret. So if the ketoret is the important part, you'd put the ketoret in the right hand, and you have the coals, which are just the facilitator, in the left hand. So why would you have it the other way around? Now he has the coals in the right hand, and he has the kaf, the ketoret, in the left hand. Where it says it's practical. Zumruba v'zumuetet. It's the difference between the weight. The coals weigh a ton, and the ketoret weighs almost nothing. So if you ask him to carry it in, just functionally, he needs the strength of his right hand to move the coals, and he keeps the ketoret in his left hand. We know exactly how much they took in. He took in 3 kav worth of coals. I mean, the Mishnah already defined how much he's taking in, and that's a decent amount of coals and a decent amount of weight. Bavilo bezman shenehem shavin. What happens if they are the same size? The possibility that the coals and the melucho pnaim are actually the same size. Chumasid Rabbi Shmo ben Kimchit. Shmo ben Kimchit, who has a size of hands, that the ketoret that he took with his 2 handfuls ended up being the same 3 kav as the coals. So then, the Gemara here has something which is eliminated by the Bach. Gemara says, Zu chama v'zu tzonenet. The coals are hot, and the ketoret is cold, so we still want to keep it on the right to left, because he needs more to deal with the hot stuff than the cold stuff. Or, even if you eliminate the girsa, it's the Gemara is just saying, it doesn't matter. Even if you have 3 kav of this and 3 kav of that, the standard is that we keep the coals on the right, because of the nature of dealing with the coals, and the difficulty of dealing with them. Amru alav Rabbi Shmo ben Kimchit. Now the Gemara is going to discuss this Kohen Gadol, Rabbi Shmo ben Kimchit, who was in Bayit Sheni, probably late in Bayit Sheni, around probably the year, 10 years after the Common Era. Shayach Hufein Arba'at Kabim Belo Chofnav. He used to take out 4 kav with his handfuls. It's a lot. He already had very big hands. I mean, that's even bigger than the manacles. So his Melochof Naim is actually bigger than the coals. He has 4 kavim of Torit and 3 kav worth of coals that he's going in with. Vomer. And he said, Kol Anashim Zardu. All of the women are valiant or have valor. Vizeriti me, Allah Alagag. And my mother's valor is to the ceiling, to the roof. In that she was great. The reason that I'm so big and great is because of my mother. Ikadam, right? So what does that mean? What was so unusual about his mother? Some say, our son has to do with the porridge that's made out of broken or split grain or a type of oatmeal. So that he was fed that. Because Rabba Bar Yonatan, Amar Rabba Bar Yonatan, it is like Rabba Bar Yonatan, Amar Rabbi Chiyal, our son Yafed Cholet. That this our son, this type of porridge or oatmeal is good for sick people. So either the definition of sick people here is the woman who is pregnant. So she ate a lot of this arsan while she was pregnant, and that's why she was so healthy and the baby was so healthy, me. Or the possibility is that when the kids were young, she fed them this good arsan, and that's why he was so healthy, that's why he grew so well. Vigadamri b'shichvat zera. That has to do with the impregnation of his mother. Uket Rabbi Abau, the Rabbi Abau Ramiktiv. He says there's a stira in the psukim. Here we're talking about 2 prakim in Tanakh, which are identical, or almost identical, which is in Shmuel Bet, Perchav Bet, you have Shirat David. And in Tehillim, in Perch Yud Chet, you also have Shirat David. It's the Torah that we read for Yom HaShvi and Pesach. When we read Shirat Hayam, the Torah is that we read from Shirat David. So Shirat David is repeated twice. Once in Shmuel, and once in Tehillim. Now they're supposedly exactly alike. But there are some nuanced differences, and there are actually some greater differences between them. The one that you're most familiar with is the last pasuk from both of them, which is Magdil and Migdol, which we say in benching, that Magdil and Migdol, the two different versions come from, one from Tehillim and one from Shmuel Bet. So here he quotes another pasuk that has a nuanced difference between them, which is, in Shmuel Bet it says, V'tazreini chayo l'milchama, that you sifted or prepared me, l'chayo, the strength for battle. Uchtiv, in Tehillim, it writes it, now they brought the wrong word here, the word there is v'tazreini chayo, there's an aleph added in it, v'tazreini chayo l'milchama. You girded me with valor and strength for milchama, for war. So what's the difference between tazreini and tazreini and ta'azreini? So I'm Rav Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shalom, zeritani, v'zeritani. So zeritani is saying the shortest word is zoreh. Zoreh, zoreh is a melacha and Shabbat. Zoreh la ruach is a sifting process. So the first case is to sift. And the second one, tazreini, to gird me, is strength. So what David HaMelech is saying is that you picked out the best, sifted to get me to be the best, and then you gave me strength. And so the idea being that when a woman is impregnated, there's numerous opportunities in terms of the shechvat zera for the woman to become impregnated. Hashem chose the best one to impregnate the woman, the best of the shechvat zera to impregnate. So that's what it means to sift or to sort. That Hashem does that. So that's what this Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchit was saying, is that my mother, by the Shechvat Zera, you sifted the best. My mother got the best of the Shechvat Zera, and therefore she got a son who was of tremendous strength and size. Amru alav Rabbi Shmuel ben Kimchit, pam achat siper dvarim im aravi achat bashuk. He was conversing with an Arab merchant in the shuk. Some spittle came out of the Arab's mouth and hit his clothing, and that makes him tamei, meaning midrabanan. He has a din of tumat zav, that the spittle is tamei, and he cannot function as the Kohen Gadol anymore. Rashi says this took place on Yom HaKippurim, which is pretty amazing. What was he doing out in the shuk? Nichnas Yishevav Achiv Vishimesh Tachtav, and his brother Yishevav filled in for him. Rata Iman Shnei Kohanim Gedolim B'Yom Echad. She saw two Kohanim Gedolim serving on one day. Vishuv Amru Alav Al Rabbi Shmuel Ben Kimchit. Another story like this. Pam Echad Yatza B'Siper Madon Echad, went out to speak with. Now Madon Echad is a master, but over here it probably has some political connotation, which is that he went to speak to some sort of Roman official. Bishuk V'Nitzad Sinra Mipiv Al Bigadav, and again some spittle got onto his clothing. V'nichnas Yosef Achiv V'shimesh Tachtav, and his brother Yosef filled in for him. V'ratah Iman Shnei Kohanim Gedolim B'Yom Echad. Again, his mother saw two Kohanim Gedolim, two of her sons, serve as Kohen Gadol in a single day. Then they say it's on Yom HaKippurim. It would make a lot more sense if it wasn't Yom HaKippurim. But Rashi says that that was on Yom HaKippurim. Tanu Rabanan, Shiva Banim Hayu La L'Kimchit. She had seven sons. V'kulam Shimshu B'Kohanah Gedolah. All of them served as Kohanim Gedolim. That could be positive or negative. Could be positive, which is all of her sons were Kohanim Dolim. Could be negative, which is that they didn't last very long. How do you have seven sons end up being the Kohanim Dolim? We saw how two of them got in to be extra, so those are three of them. We still have another four that need to serve. How did that happen? I mean, in terms of span of time and how long they served. Amru la chachamim, ma'asit shezachit lekach. See that the chachamim have a positive image of Kimchit, because she has seven children that are Kohanim Dolim, seems to be of size, stature, and so on and so forth, and they look positively upon this. They go, what zchut did you have that did this? What merit? Amra lahem, miyamai, lora'u korit biti, kil'ei se'arai. The boards, roof beams, never saw the plaits or the braids of my hair. She was a married woman. She covered her hair. But not only did she cover her hair when she was outside, she covered her hair even when she was in the house. She was super tzanua. And because of that tzniut, she says she was zucha to these Kohanim Gedolim. Rashi says that he heard, based on the Yerushalmi, that the connection between Tzniut and the Kohen Gadol is based on the pasuk that says, Kol kvoda bat melech pnima, mimishpito zahav levusha. Sanctity of the woman is in her Tzniut, and then that is even greater than mishpito zahav. It's as if she's wearing these settings of gold, and that connects to the big day Kohen Gadol, which has mishpito zahav on them. Therefore, there's a correlation between tzniut and having a Kohen Gadol, or having a son who is ra'ui to be the Kohen Gadol. Very interesting, the Chazal's answer there. Amrullah, harbe asukeim v'lo ho'ilo. We know many women who have done this, and it didn't help. That cannot be the zchut by which you have these children. Must be something else, because this is not necessarily definitive or efficacious, because we know many women who have done this practice, and yet they don't have children that look like your children. Right? Tarabanan, Bikumso, it says by the Menachot that he has to take it off Bikumso, Kumso in the possessive form, a Kometz Shalom. So because of that, Shalom Yaseh Mida LeKometz. Therefore, you're not allowed to make a measurement to take off the Kometz. The Kometz has to be done by the Kohen himself by his hand, and you can't simulate the size of his hand by making a Kli that's the size of his hand because of his Bikumso. But Kometz Shalom says he must use his hand. What's the din with regards to the chofnaim that he has to take here? It says that is komet shelo. Over here it doesn't write bichofnav, but his chofen ella melo chofnav. It describes the size rather than the actual amount. So here it says v'akach melo achta galicheish malam isbech pneshem umlo chofnav kitoret. Lo chofnav ketoret is just describing what the size of the ketoret is. But it's not telling you that the chofnaim has to be taken from physically his hands. As opposed to the komets, which is v'kamatz v'kumto, that he takes it off with his own komets, v'kamet shalo. I mean, they're both written in the possessive form, but it's how it's written. One of them is written as part of the verb, which is that it's describing the vehicle by which he functions and does the kemitzah, kamatz v'kumto. So there, you say he has to use his komets. Over here, it says v'lakach. Lakach is the verb, and it just tells you how much. How much is it? Melo chofnav. That amount. So it doesn't tell you that you physically have to take it in that way. And that's what the Gemara's safek is. With regards to the komets, the Gemara is sure that it has to be his hand that takes off the komets. Over here, they're not sure if it's his hands must do it, or something that simulates the size of his hand that would do it. So it doesn't say chofnav, but rather melo chofnav ketoret tzemim taka. Just tells you the amount. It's giving you a description of the amount, but not how it's done. So maybe they're low, then you wouldn't have the problem. Meaning that you could use a kli, he doesn't have to use his hands physically. Odilma yalif melo melo kumtso. That also by the comments it says melo kumtso. And over here it says melo chofnav. It says you have melo melo, we'll have a gzeira shava. And just by comments, you're not allowed to use a kli to replace his hands. So it's over here, you can't use a kli to replace his hands. So tashma, what about our Mishnah? Bekach aita midata. Says about the ladle, that this was the size of the ladle. The size of the ladle matched the chofnaim, the hands of the Kohen Gadol. My love, what is that teaching us in the Mishnah? Shim ratzala sot midah osa. That if he wants to make a midah, he can do it. That's what it sounds like from the Mishnah. The Pashtut, the Mishnah is that they made a ladle that matched his hand size. Why would they do that? So that he could take it out with the ladle instead of his hands. Or it says, lo, hachi gamar. V'kach haya chuzer v'chofna lifnim. That's how he did the chofna inside. It's not that they made another, the ladle the size of his hands, but rather, kachaya midata is that he had to pour from the spoon back into his hands. That's what I said before, that he takes the chofnaim, he puts it into the spoon. When he gets inside and puts the coals down, now he has to put the ketoret back into his hands and then place it on the pan. He can't just take it from the ladle and put it directly on the pan. It's actually a machloka later on where he has to put the ketoret back into his hands, which is chofein v'chozer v'chofein. The Gemara says, shmat minah. That's the case. Chofein v'chozer v'chofein. You could conclude from our Mishnah that you have to do a chafina the second time. You have to pour it from the spoon back into his hand. If that's the case, then we have an answer to our question that we're going to have later on. Gemara says, no, dilma. Shemrat lasot midah osa. Inami shalei achsa v'shalei yotir. Gemara says that we don't know what our Mishnah is saying. But there are a number of options of what the Mishnah is saying, and therefore you can't bring a definitive proof to it. There are three possibilities of what the Mishnah is saying. Either it means that when he gets back into Lifnai Lifnim, he's got to pour the ketoret back into his hands. It could be that he can make a kli and use that kli to scoop out the ketoret, and that would work fine. That's what the Mishnah could mean. Or the Mishnah could mean that Shelo yachsar v'lo yotir, that why did they make the spoon that size? Is to get the size that it should match. He should know that he has the exact amount or the exact size. Now Tosafot says, why don't we just say, which seems to be the Pashtuta Mishnah, which is that they made the spoon the size of his hands, so that when he took the ketoret out of the Beit Avtinas, when he got it in the pan, and then he puts it in his hands, and he puts it into the spoon will match the size of his hands. So that would be the simplest reading of the Mishnah. Why doesn't the Gemara entertain that possibility? He says, because it doesn't make so much sense. You would not make the spoon the size of his hands in that case, because it would be much easier if it wasn't the size of his hands, if it was bigger than his hands. Because he's got to take this mlochafnaim and then enter it into the spoon now. When he does that, if the bigger it is, the less chance of stuff spilling out. So he'd actually want it to be bigger and not the size of his hands. So that's why Tosfot says that the Gemara does not entertain that possibility as being the explanation for our Mishnah. All right, Tanur Rabbanan. Every one of these pieces of the Gemara is going to deal with the komets from the Mincha and the Moloch of Naim from the Torah by Yom HaKippurim. And it's going to go through, again, both for the komets and for the Chofnayim, dinim, and we're going to see if they're equal or different. Tarvanan, melokum tzol, yochol mevurat. I would think that when you're talking about melokum tzol, that it would be excessive, meaning beyond, it would stick out of the sides of his hand. Tamalomar, bikum tzol. It's got to be komets, exactly. Ibikum tzol, yochol afil brosheet butav. I would think even with the beginning of his fingers, tamalomar, melokum tzol. Kedikam seinche. It's got to be like the way that people do a komets. How do you do this? So the Gemara has a number of questions here. First of all, when you have the komets in your hand, can it be sticking out of your hand? The answer to the Gemara is no, it can't be sticking out. It's got to be inside of your hand. Next thing is, maybe it should just be Rosh Hetzbutav. Now, Rosh Hetzbutav is used here and differently later on in the Gemara. But here it means, what about this? He just folds his fingers on themselves. Maybe that's considered to be a komet. Gemara says, no, kid the kamsay in shape. This is not complicated. Don't make it complicated. It's the way that most people do a komets. How do they do that? Haketzad. Kufe shlosh etzbutav apisat yadol bekomets. You take the three middle fingers, excluding your pinky and excluding your thumb, and you fold them onto the palm. That's a komets. That's a komets worth, is that you fold your three fingers onto your palm. What's inside? That's considered to be a komets. We'll see in a second how you access the komets. That'll be later on the daf today, but that's the size of the komets. Ubemachavat, ubemarcheshet. Now, machavat and marcheshet are different types of menachot. We have numerous types of menachot. These are two of the types of menachot. They are unusual because they are baked before he takes off the komets. So now he has to take off the komets, not from flour. The other items are not baked yet, so he's taking it off from the raw flour. It's understandable and easy to understand how he takes off a komets when you're dealing with raw flour. But when you're dealing with something that's baked already, and it's a hard object, taking off a komets from that is much more difficult, and it's much more difficult to get the right size to fit it in, because they're not fine pieces of flour you have. So now, mochek begodlo milamalo betzvo ketana milamato, and that's what Fred was indicating before. Then in this case, you wipe it off with your thumb on top and the pinky on the bottom. Because if you just have flour, it would fall away by itself. The fineness of the flour, you'd get the three fingers worth, and everything else would fall away. By the machabat and marcheshet, which are baked already, you're taking out pieces that would stick together. Or they'd be larger than the area of your three fingers, so you have to wipe off the top and bottom to make sure that it fits into the three fingers and it's not in excess of that amount. So now, there is a machloket in the Gemara Menachot with regards to the machavat and marcheshet, which is that it says there in the Torah, patot oto pitim. That after you've baked it, you have to patot oto pitim. Gemara Menachot deals with machloket, whether that means he folds it up, you fold it like 2 to 4 to 6 to 12, you fold it up into smaller pieces. That's one day out there. The other day out is that you return it to solid. You return it back to flour. You crumble it to the point that it's flour. Now, according to that opinion, there's nothing to speak about here because you're back to square one, which is now you have flour again and it's easy to work with. Time about the opinion who says that you're folding it and it still has chunks or it's still pieces of mincha that's left. So in that case, when he takes off a komets, that's difficult because he has to get the whole pieces out but not have them exceed his three fingers. So now the Gemara says, as Fred mentioned before, v'zohi avodah kasha shebimikdash. This is the hardest avodah in the mikdash. The Gemara says, zohi v'tulo. This is the hardest one. There's nothing else in that category. Vayika malika. Malika is also very difficult. Vayika chafina. And the chafina of the Kohen Gadol is also very difficult. Chafina is the taking of the Torah for Yom HaKippurim. But here, the avodah chafina is not the taking it originally, but when he gets into Kodesh HaKadoshim to get the spoon back into his hands, that's very difficult. Elo zohi mi'avodot kashot shemikdash. It's in the Hall of Fame, it's in the top three most difficult avodot in the Mikdash is this komets, and in that category are the malika and the chafinata ketorah, which is the ketorah of Yom HaKippurim. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. By Rabbi Yoshua ben Oza'a, or others say it's Rabbi Yoshua Oza'a, ben abinayim shomalokum tzomau. That which is stuck in between his fingers, what is the din? Amar papa, digavai lo tibayiloch. That which is on the inside, you don't have to worry about. That is vadai kometsu. That's part of the komets. Dibarai. That which is on the outside, lo tibayiloch. That is not a question. Dibadai shirayim hu. That's definitely on the leftovers, meaning that it's part of the mincha, not part of the komets. Kitabayiloch, the beni beni. The question that you have is that which sits right in the middle. Mai, what's the din? When you take off the komets, you have your three fingers that press up against your palm, but then between each of the three fingers, you have two gaps there, so stuff gets trapped between your fingers. So what's the status of that which is between your fingers? So he says, anything you can see on the outside is clearly not part of the komets. Anything you can see on the inside, that is part of the komet. Question is, that which is directly between the fingers, what is the din of that item? So I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Hadar Pashto. After that, he answered it. Rabbi Shua ben Oza, Rabbi Shua Oza ben Abinayim Safek Ninhu. They're definitely a Safek. Now, what type of answer is that? I mean, he had a question, he had a Safek. And his answer is, oh, it is a Safek. I mean, how does that answer the question that he posed before? So Tosafot gives two possibilities of what the question before was, is it inside, outside, or Safek? So those are the three possibilities. And in the end, he answers, Safek. So he did at least clarify it. He narrowed down the choices. Before we had three choices, which is inside, outside, and safek. Now he clarifies and says for sure it's a safek. That's one possible answer. The other answer is, Tosafot says, there's a possibility that that which is between his fingers is neither. It's neither a komets nor a shirayim. Because it's talui b'data kohen. That's to do with the data kohen. When the kohen goes in, what is considered to be komets? Has to do what the Kohen is focused on that he's making into a Kometz. What he has in mind to make the Kometz is what is in his hand, not which is between his fingers. Clearly he didn't make it a Kometz. In terms of Shirayim, it's not Shirayim because he took it off. So it's not part of that residual that was left behind. So Tosafot introduces the possibility that it's still Tevel, which is a concept that we have by Masrot. Masrot, you're supposed to take off 10%. What happens if you take off 11%? So the Gemara says, when you take off 11% instead of 10%, his tevel is mentukan. That which he left behind is fine, because you took off sufficient amount to be maser. Aval is masrot are mekul kolot. The maser is problematic, because 10% of it is maser. 1% of it remains tevel, because that 1% that you took is not part of the shirayim that you left behind, because you made it into maser. But it's together with the maser, but it's not maser, because you only need 10% to be maser. So that 1% is what's called mikukal. It's messed up, it's problematic, that 1%, because it's neither maser nor shirayim, so it remains tevel. So he says that was the possibility here. Possibility here is that that which is stuck between your fingers would be neither. It would be neither a komets nor the shirayim. It's not a komets because you didn't have a mind to take it off. It's not the shirayim because it's not left behind, it's in your hand right now. So because of that, it would remain tevel, meaning it remain like a mincha before a komets is taken off from it. That was a possibility, or is it a safek? It's either a komets or a shirayim. And that's what he answers. He answers, it's not tevel. It's for sure either a komets or a shirayim. That's the second way Tosafot reads it. The Ritva, another possibility of reading it, he says that safek means like ben hashmashot. We have different ways of viewing ben hashmashot. Is ben hashmashot day? Is ben hashmashot night? Or is ben hashmashot day-night? It's this bria b'fnei atzma. But here the safek can be different types of safek. You can have a safek where it's a new bria, or you can have a safek which is, ben hashmashot is day and night, we just don't know where the threshold is. So there is exact day and exact night, we just don't know where that threshold is. Or you can phrase it as, the day and night are mixed, and it's both at the same time. It's not, we don't know which one it is, it's just neither. So that's what the Ritva says over here in the end. When he says safek, he says, no, it is not a bria b'fnei atzma, it is komets and shirayim. We just don't know where the line is. We don't know where that threshold is. So that's the way the Ritva describes his being poter. The safek is, yes, it is shirayim and komets. It's just we don't know where that line is. That's the answer that he gave. First of all, Tosafot mentions already in Afkamina, if it's tevel versus whether it's a safek, is if it gets mixed up with something else. Tevel, if it gets mixed up with something else, is problem b'mashu, and you can't be mevatalit. If it's a fake komets or shirayim, then if it gets mixed in something else, it's batel b'rov. And so because of that, it makes a difference whether it's tevel or safek. So there is an afkamina, even Tosafot brings. But the Gemara itself addresses what to do now. Hey chiyavit, what do you do with this? Amri chanina, makti komets l'chudei t'chidai. First puts on the komets, it's inside of hand, that which is inside the hand first. Father ben abinayim. And then he puts on that which is stuck between his fingers. Diamar ben abinayim bereisha. If he puts on that first, dilma shirayim ninu. Maybe they're not part of the komets, but rather what should be left behind. Babu shirayim shechasru ben kamitza l'haktara. And that would be a problem because the Gemara Darshan's list in Menachot that when you put the komets on the Mizbeach, there's a de'ah there, that everything, the shirayim has to be whole. If the shirayim are not whole, then the komets can't go on the Mizbeach. So if you were to put the Beni Binayim, if you put what was between the fingers on first, maybe that was shirayim. For shirayim, now you reduce the amount that's left behind, you can't put the komets on afterwards. So you put on the komets first. If the shirayim gets reduced from their size between the time you take off the komets and before you put on the mizbeach, you don't put the komets on the mizbeach for that shirayim. So if that's the case, hashtanami ikre kan koshim menuli shim ariu babal taktiru. Wait a minute. We have a separate restriction, which is that the only thing that can go on the Mizbeach is that which belongs on the Mizbeach. It says, Lo Toktiru Mimenu Yishev LaHashem. So Lo Toktiru Mimenu Yishev LaHashem, the Gemara dashes from that, only that which is Kosh Mimenu LeIshim. Anything that has something from it that ends up on the Mizbeach, the remainder, Ariyu B'Lach Toktiru, the remainder is in restriction being placed on the Mizbeach. So Vira Mincha, the Kometz is what goes on the Mizbeach. That means the residual has an Iser Lav of Baal Toktiru to get onto the Mizbeach, to be placed on the Mizbeach. So now, if he put on the Bnei Binayim after he puts on the Kometz, and it's really Shirayim, then he's in violation of Lo Taktiru. You're not allowed to put on Shirayim onto the Mizbeach. So Amar Yehuda, Brei Rabbi Shimon Pazi, the Makter Leil Shumeitzim, Rabbi Eliezer. Machloket in the Gemara, in Menachot as well, and in Zvachim, as to this concept of whether you can put something on the Mizbeach, but not intend it to be for the Mizbeach. Which is that you go up there and you say, look, I'm not sure if this should be on the Mizbeach or not. I have a Safek here. Two different things got mixed up, right? So this is the Tanai. He says, if it belongs on the Mizbeach, this is on the Mizbeach. If it doesn't belong on the Mizbeach, I'm putting firewood, more firewood for the Mizbeach. Now, firewood you're allowed to put on the Mizbeach. Can he do the same tonight over here? He'll do the same thing, which is, the Tanya, Belez Omer, La Reach Nichoach, Iyat Amaleh. The restriction here of Lo Toktiru Mimenu Yishev LaHashem, there the Pasuk also mentions Reach Nichoach. So he says, the only time that there's a restriction about putting something on the Mizbeach, if you do it specifically for Haktarah, you do it to give it to Hashem, to present to Hashem. But if you do it simply as firewood, which is an enabler, a facilitator, that is not a problem to put on the Mizbeach. And so again, if you create this Tanai, you would be able to do this. You'll say that which is Bnei Binayim, then when you put it on, after you put the Kometz on, so all the Shirayim is intact, if it is Shirayim, then I'll put the Bnei Binayim on. If it's a Kometz, I'll say, this is a Kometz, it's part of the Kometz. If it's Shirayim, then it's just adding firewood to the Mizbeach, and I'm not in violation of Baal Taktiru. Gemara says, Anichal the Rabbi Eliezer. That's great for the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, the Rabbanon who argue on him there and say, you can't do that, you can't put anything on the Mizbeach that's unnecessary. Ma'ik of the Meimar, what are they going to do? Very interesting answer of the Gemara. Amar of Mari, the Kamsei Shmeine. They only had fat, Paji, Kohanim do the Avoda. So the Gemara says, oh, Hashra, Dante, the Hochi, if that's the case. Rabbi Eliezer, Nami, the Chatkila, the Kamsei Shmeine. Rabbi Eliezer's solution is a Bidiavad solution. That's if we have to, we'll do that solution and use the Tanai. But the Chatkila, Rabbi Eliezer would suggest the same thing. Use someone who has Paji fingers, because then when they put them together, when they squeeze the fingers together, there's no room for gapping between them. If you have narrow or thinner fingers, when you put them together, there's gapping between the fingers. They don't fit together properly, and that's where you get the Bnei Binayim. If you have pudgier fingers, when you squeeze them together, the excess of the pudginess squeezes together, and there's no gapping, there's nothing there. There won't be anything stuck between the fingers. And so that's how you'll solve the problem. You use Kohanim that don't have this issue. So they use the fat-fingered Kohanim to do this avoda in order to avoid this safek of the Bnei Binayim. All right, next. Bairo Popo. Bnei Binayim shel Melo Chofnav Mahu. So we just dealt with this with regards to the Kometz. So now, what about by Yom HaKippurim, the Chofnayim of Yom HaKippurim? What's the dinner? It says, Makami Baile. What's his question? Igamar Melo Melo Mehotam. We already said before that we had a safek with regards to the Chofnayim's connection to Kometz. Before we asked about the Kli. Gemara says, depends if you learn the Gzer Shavah, if you don't learn the Gzer Shavah. So Rav Papa's question is just the same question in a different format, which is, do we learn the Gzer Shavah from Kometz, and then Hainu Hach, it'll be the same thing, or do we not learn the Gzer Shavah, and therefore Chofnayim could be independent? So he's just posing the question in a different form. Why would he ask the question again? So now Gemara says, no, Rav Papa, Achai Ba'ilei. Papa is saying this, I have a question within Chofnayim independent of the Gzer Shavah, which is, Melo Chofnav Ve'vi Be'inan. It says in the Pasuk with regards to the Toret, it says, Melo Chofnav Toret Sarim Taka Ve'vi Mibeit La'Parochet. So there, Va'ika. So he did that. He brought in the Melo Chofnav and he brought it in. Odilma Ve'lakach Ve'vi Be'inan Va'aleka. He has to take it and then bring it in, and that's your missing over here, Teku. The assumption being that when you take the Melo Chofnav and you take the Kometz, what the Kohen has in mind is for what's inside of his hand. That's what he has in mind for. What's stuck between his fingers is inadvertent. It isn't something that he did consciously, that he doesn't squeeze his fingers and say, I caught some stuff between my fingers. Whatever comes in between his fingers is memela. So the question is, do you have to have active kavanah for what is being brought in? So that's the suffix. The suffix is that the beginning of the pasuk begins velakach. Pasuk ends with hevi. Then you have in between those two items, you have the poles and the ketoret. So v'lakach, at the beginning of the pasuk, what is the object of the lakach? The object of the lakach could be the earlier part of the pasuk, which is the poles, or lakach could be like lakach colon, and then you have poles and ketoret. So is the lakach modified by both the poles and by the ketoret? And that's the question of Rav Papa. Rav Papa says, I don't know. I don't know if ketoret It's first take the gechalim and the machta, and then the pasuk says get ketoret, and then lochav nav ketoret and go in. Lakach is not defining the ketoret, and that means whatever goes in, and that's it. Doesn't matter whether you had in mind for it or not. Or is the lakach at the beginning of the pasuk speaking about both the coals and the ketoret in the pasuk? If that's the case, then I have to actively take the goals, but I also have to actively take the ketoret. Only what I actively take in is considered to be ketoret. That means what cuts caught between my fingers is not considered to be ketoret. So Rav Papa says, independent of the gzera, even if I don't have the gzera shava to komets, even within lo chofnayim, I have that same question, which is the bene benayim, what's its status? Do I need active, conscious focus on what I'm taking in, or is it simply whatever goes in gets used? And that difference, well, manifests itself in the bene benayim. What's stuck between your fingers will matter. We are nafkamina in that case. The Rav Papa's question exists independent of connecting it to the komets of the mincha. All right, Amar Papa, pshitali, I know, malokum tso, ketakam seinshe. How do you do a komets? That's the way people do it. Yeah, the Gemara says, oh, that's the way people do it. So it was obvious to them what it meant to do a komets, to us, like, well, what's a komets? So Rashi over here explains that a komets is this way. You take your hands, and like a karate chop, you hold it sideways, and you depress it into the item sideways. So that means that your hand is upright, and then you press it down into the object, and then squeeze your fingers onto your palm. That's how you do a komets. That's the kamsi in shape. That's the way a person takes a komets. You think about putting it into a fine flour, or you'd say putting it into a spices. You push your hand down sideways, and then you close your fingers on the palm, and you lift it out. That would be a komets. That's works. That I know for sure works. That's what a komets means. Now he has other versions of this. Does it work? Vayra papa, kamats beroshe etzbotav maho. If he did it with the tops of his fingers, would it work? Now, this is different than the tops of the fingers before. The tops of the fingers before was that he simply folded his fingers onto his fingers. We said that doesn't work. What he's saying now is he takes his palm facing downward, and then he goes down to the level of the solet, the flour, whether it's flour, whether it's any spices, whatever you're doing, and then he uses his fingers to bring it up, scoop it up to his palm. Does that work? Next. Milamata lamalo mahu. What happens if he scoops it upwards? Meaning that he takes his hand with his palm of his hand facing up, gets down to the level, and then he uses his fingers to bring it into his palm of his hand, and then he picks it up from there. Does that work? Minetzdodim mahu. Or if he does it from the side, how does that work? He comes down with the palm of his hand upward, and then he slides his hand across internally, and then the spices, whatever it is, comes into his hand, and he closes his fingers on that. So does that work? So all of these cases, he leaves as a teiku, unresolved. So all of those he leaves as a teiku. He says, I know how you're supposed to do it, but do these alternatives work? And he leaves all of them as unresolved. So that's with regards to komets. Now, Amar Rav Papa, pshitali, melo chofnav, kedechafne inche. That when he takes off the melo chofnayim, it's the way that people normally do it. What do you mean? The way they normally do it? Again, what does that mean? So here Rashi again gives us the description of what does that mean normally. Is chodash o pasa yadamata. The same way that you did it by the komets, which is that you came down with your hand on its side, with your pinky entering in first. So your pinky enters from both hands, you depress your pinkies in, and then you close the hands together. And that's how you get a melo chofnayim. That's the normal way to do it. Happens to be that's Parshat HaShavua. Then in Parshat HaShavua, it says with the Makkah of Shechin, it says, Vayom HaShem HaMoshe Aaron, Kru Lachem, Melo Chofneichem Piach Kivshan. Take handfuls of Piach HaKivshan with the ashes of the furnace, and then throw it up into the Shemaim, and it'll spread out over Mitzrayim and become Shechin in Mitzrayim. Melo Chofnayim is actually used in this week's Parsha, but it was clear that they knew what that meant, that Melo Chofnayim was a terminology that was well known. So over here, Rashi describes it as, again, you put your pinkies in, close the hands together, and lift it out. So that's the regular way to do it. What about, again, what happens if he does it chafan beroshe etzbotav? Again, if he does it with his palms facing down, then he uses his fingers to bring it into his two hands and then close the hands on that. The same way again, if he has his palms facing up and then he scoops them and brings it up, or he uses his fingers to bring it into his palms and then brings them together. Minatzad mahu, again, if he takes his two hands and comes from the side and closes them together, does that work? Chafan bezu ubezu, rekavan zu etzuzu mahu. If he does them separately, he does one hand, and then puts them together, does that work? Ma'o take all of those he leaves as unresolved. I don't know. I know what a chofen, a normal way to do it is. All of these have the same result, but it's a question of methodology. Does the methodology work or not? That Rav Papa leaves as a teku. Tosafot says over here, even though these questions seem completely redundant, it's clear to the Gemara that a komets and a chofen are totally different. Because they say kedekamse inche and kedechafne inche. So they are functionally different, even though they seemingly have some connection between them, or the Gemara keeps asking to connect between them. Nevertheless, it's clear that they're different, and therefore Rav Papa poses the series of questions that he asked with regards to the Komets. He now repeats with regards to the Chofen or Chofnayim, because it's relevant to ask the same questions, even if they're not resolved with regards to the Komets, or they're problematic with regards to the Komets, they still may be okay for the Chofnayim, because they're not exactly alike. Now, by Rav Papa, Davke the Komets v'dofne demana, my. If you take the Komets, after you take the Komets off the Mincha, you have to place it into a Kli Sharet again. Now, when you place it into a Kli Sharet, what happens if you don't put it, it says El Toch, into the Kli? If you don't put it at the base of the Kli, but you stick it to the wall of the Kli, what's the din? Mincha, Komets of a Mincha that has to be placed into a Kli Sharet before it's put on the Mizbeach. That Komets, if he doesn't put it directly in the base of the Kli, but he sticks it to the wall of the Kli, what is the din? Toch kli beinen vayika. It has to be inside the kli, and it is. It's in the walls of the kli. Odelma hanacha betocho kitiguno beinen. That you have to place it in the kli like you normally would. I mean, how do you place something into a kli? You put it at the base of the kli. Valeka. You didn't do that. Teku. Unresolved. Vayimar baravashi. By the way, this is a gemara in Menachot. It's not relevant to our gemara over here. But the gemara is quoting a gemara from Menachot, and since it's identical, it just brings you the whole gemara through to the end of that gemara there, to the Mishnah. So here we have the same thing, which Tosafot mentions that there were some girsot in our gemara that didn't have this Bayimar Baravashi, but our gemara brings it because it's the same as the gemara in Menachot, and they already brought in items that don't matter, like this Komets issue. But the Kli doesn't matter here, but they brought it in because that's the flow of the gemara. So to over here. Bayimar Baravashi, apche no mana. He flips the Kli over, upside down. Vidavke the Komets ba'arite. The mana. And he puts it on the base of the Kli. Now, what is that? So, the way Rashi describes it in Menachot, that seems to be the way Tosfot is understanding it here as well, is the underside of the Kli has a base to it, and that base has an inside to it. It has a toch. So therefore, hanacha betocho be'inen va'ika, you did place it in the Kli, it's just in the base of the Kli. Or, you know, you have to put it in the normal way that you would put it in, and that you didn't do. Teku. What's interesting here, I would have explained it differently, which is that he turns the Kli upside down, and then he sticks the Komets into the base of the Kli while it's upside down. And you have, I think, the same question, which is, Toho? You have Toho, it's inside the Kli. In terms of Teku, no, you don't usually put something upside down into a Kli. And that would be the question. They don't explain it that way. But I'm saying, I think that the question is just as valid in that direction as well. Vayra papum lo chofnav shamru mechukot o vidushot. We tell him lo chofnayim. Are they mechukot or vidushot? You have that question whenever you take measurements. Whenever you take a measurement of a solid item, you can stack on top of it. You can have a pile on top. Mechukot means you wipe off the top and there's no pile on top. Gidushot means gadish, piled up on top. So when I take these lo chofnayim out, right, is it a heap? The heaping one in is handfuls? Or is it flat? We take off the top. So which one is it? Amalei Rabbi Abba, Rav Ashi. Tashma, melo chofnav shamru, lo mechukot, velo gidushot, ela tefufot. He says, it's neither. It's not sliced off at the top, it's not heaping, it's not piled up, ela tefufot. As Rashi says, something that floats on top, from the Mishnah Avot, da'atef da'tfuch. Those that drown you will drown. That's the midah keneged midah. So it means that it is not heaping high, it's not sliced off flat, but slightly, as a slight top to it. Slightly rounded, slight top to it, and that's the way that the Melo Chofnayim are brought into the Mikdash. Okay, we'll stop over here.